Good evening, everyone. Hope you've had a good day, good afternoon. I really enjoyed our time of worship this morning. I've been looking forward to the study on the book of Daniel. And as I've been preparing, I actually started preparing for this sermon series about 3 months ago. And so I've been reading and doing a lot of pre-study. And then as the time was approaching to get to this place where I was going to kick off the study, I began to realize that the Sunday morning services is not the only sermon that I've got to prepare. You know, you'd think after a while in the pastor, you'd realize these things, but you know, that's where it was. And so I was thinking, oh, okay, well, what do I need to focus on? We spent about 9 months walking through the first half of the book of Exodus, and I hope you enjoyed that. I felt like we needed a break from that. And we got through all the good stories for the most part. There are a few in there in the last half of the book, but and so I started praying and asking God, you know, what is it that we need to study next? And what do you have for us? And I just kept coming back to the book of Daniel. You see, my plan all along, since I planned to preach the sermon series on Sunday mornings, was to take the first 6 weeks or so of the new year and focus on the book of Daniel, the first half of the book of Daniel. As I shared with you this morning, the first half of the book of Daniel are the stories about Daniel and his friends. But the last half, chapter 7 through 12, really get into the prophecies of the book of Daniel. And so my plan was, we'll take January and February to look at Daniel 1 through 6 on Sunday mornings, and then we'll start in March on Daniel 7 through 12 in the Sunday evening services. So I was sitting here trying to think, you know, and pray and ask God, okay, God, what do you want me to cover on Sunday evenings for January and February? And I kept coming back to the book of Daniel. And so tonight, you're going to, well, for the next several weeks, if it's okay, I just feel like God is leading us to spend Sunday mornings and Sunday nights in the book of Daniel. Now, my goal in this is very different. On Sunday mornings, my goal is to try to take the story that we have, that we find there, and find the example that's given to us by the follower of God, whether that's Daniel or whether it's the three Hebrew children, or just the experience that each of these stories gives. You know, whether it's the handwriting on the wall or the interpretation of dreams from Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to look at all of these things and try to find simple, practical application for how we should live our life as a result. But on Sunday nights, we're going to take a little bit different approach. You know, this is like preaching to the choir, right? You guys are the faithful few or whatever. It's an opportunity to spend some time really unpacking the book in such a way to touch on things that, frankly, I don't have time to talk about on Sunday mornings unless I preach much longer than anyone wants me to. And so if it's okay with you, we're going to be looking at the book of Daniel tonight and for the next few weeks. And we're going to start by just having a simple introduction about some of the background information, who wrote it, when was it written, the historical background, the cultural background, and some of the theological themes. And then we'll jump into chapter 1, which we studied today. And hopefully this will be a help enhance. That's my goal, is to enhance what we talked about this morning with our study tonight. Dr. Stephen Miller said these words. He said, "The book of Daniel is not only one of the most intriguing works in the Bible, but it is also filled with timeless truths that are just as relevant to modern believers as they were to those who first heard them. Yet too often this beautiful prophecy is neglected or deliberately avoided by believers because some of its passages seem strange and difficult. Upon careful examination, however, Bible students will find the principal message of Daniel clear and a study of the book extremely profitable. I got to be honest with you. I've been preaching now for 25 and a half years. That's a long time. Now, it's only half the time that Brother Ron's been at it, but 25 and a half years. This is a long time. This is the first time I've ever ventured out to try to teach the book of Daniel. Because, as Dr. Miller put it, there are some strange things in the book of Daniel. I've studied it on multiple occasions. I've looked at it from a systematic theology viewpoint, looking at the eschatology, the teachings about the end times, the tribulation, and all of those things. But I've never just tried to go simply verse by verse through the book of Daniel. So this is an adventure for me, and one that I enter into with fear and trepidation. When you think about the author of the book of Daniel, who do you think the author of the book of Daniel is? Anyone? Daniel. You know, when I was growing up, this whole idea of authorship of the book was really a simple thing. They wrote, or the name of the book was the name of the author, unless it was Paul, and then it was the name of the recipient. That's simple. But now all of our modern scholars just find this need to nitpick everything and make it much more difficult. And when it comes to the concept of who wrote the book of Daniel, it really is a very big issue, a very important issue that we need to determine. Do we believe that Daniel, the prophet of God who started in 605 BC and reigned and served God until 535 BC, for those 70 years, Daniel was that man and he wrote this book as we have it today? That's an important issue in our understanding of the book. And so, as I said, in recent years, there's been a big debate as to the date and the authorship of the book of Daniel. This debate is a divisive factor in the overall understanding of the book, because if you believe that Daniel wrote it, then you will interpret it in one way. But if you believe the other view that I'll share with you in a moment, then it completely transforms your understanding of what the book means. And so for just a minute, I want to unpack this and think about these two opposing views about the authorship and date of the book of Daniel. And view number one, I'm calling the traditional view. This is that Daniel is the author of the book as we have it today, and its history and prophecies are accurate and reliable. Pretty simple stuff. It was given to Daniel by special revelation from God, and Daniel was able to predict the events that have already taken place in human history, but he predicted those as future events because they had not taken place in his time frame. And we believe the date, the traditional view, is that the date of the writing of the book was sometime around 536 BC. Now, did I tell you this morning how old Daniel was when he was taken out of Jerusalem and taken over to Babylon? Did I share that? I could. Well, I'll tell you, Brother Steve. They estimate that Daniel was about 15 years old. Okay? So just a teenager. And I should have mentioned that, but I had a lot of different things I could have mentioned, and so I was trying my best not to take too much time. And so about 15 years old when he started. So with our estimation, he's lived most of his life at this point. With a 536 BC writing, that would be somewhere in his early 80s, 84 years old at the time that he wrote this. And the reason that we believe that is in chapter 1, it tells when he started as a prophet, but it also tells us when he ended as a prophet, because it says that he continued to prophesy for God until King Cyrus was in power, and King Cyrus was over the Medes and Persians who took over the Babylonian Empire much later on in his lifetime. And so this is the traditional view. Daniel wrote it. Everything in it The history is all accurate. The prophecies were truly prophetic, and that some of those things have taken place already, but some of the others still have yet to take place. The other view is called the Maccabean view or the Maccabean thesis. And the author of the book, according to this view, the author of the book as we have it today was an anonymous Jew during the 2nd century BC. And that's the reason they call it the Maccabean thesis, because 2nd century BC was the time of the Maccabeans. The theory purports that the book was written as an encouragement to the Jews who were suffering under severe persecution from Antiochus Epiphanes IV. And this was like 175 BC, almost a couple hundred years before Christ. Now, understanding that it was written some 400 years after the events described, scholars believe that Daniel consists of, and I quote, non-historical accounts and pseudo-prophecies. These are Bible scholars today that are saying it's non-historical accounts and pseudo-prophecies. I don't have to define those words for you, do I? And so that's why this is such a big deal about who wrote the book of Daniel. Because if we ascribe to this second view, then what we're saying is that these are myths. And I'm going to talk for a little bit about this. So as one who believes in the Bible, and if I quote our doctrinal statement, we believe that the Bible is God's inerrant revelation, complete in the Old and New Testament, written by divinely inspired men as they were moved by the Holy Spirit. That is our church's doctrinal statement. As one who believes that, it is imperative that we hold to the traditional view of the authorship and the date for the writing of the book of Daniel. And so I want to share just some evidence. I believe it's compelling evidence as to why we should believe in this view. First of all, if the late date is accepted, the date of 2nd century BC, then it would make the author of the book of Daniel a deceiver. Would it not? Because he wrote it as if he was writing this at the end of his life. He would be a deceiver. Both Ezekiel and Christ, however, give testimony to the trustworthiness of this book, identifying God's prophet as the author. Ezekiel 14:20, Daniel is identified as the author. Matthew 24:15, Jesus Christ identifies Daniel as the author. The author of Daniel exhibited a more extensive knowledge of 6th century events than would seem possible for a 2nd century writer. Let me ask you this. It's 2016. Hardly seems possible, right? But it's 2016. 400 years ago, 1616, the King James Version of the Bible was 5 years old. Okay? How well would any one of us be able to write authoritatively about daily events in the life of people in the 17th century? Could we? And yet, that's what Daniel does, is he writes a lot of details about what 6th century life was like in Babylon. In the 2nd century BC, another aspect of this is that the government in the 2nd century BC was very hostile toward the Jews. I mentioned earlier Antiochus Epiphanes IV, who was persecuting the Jews at this time. And their idea is, well, this was written to encourage the Jews, and that's why this anonymous writer wrote it. But if the government was hostile toward the Jews, how can you justify Daniel being highly regarded and given positions of authority in that book? You know, that would never even be considered in a second century mindset. You go on and you look at archaeological discoveries. Now, some claim that Daniel had historical errors because of the discrepancies between Daniel chapter 1 and Jeremiah chapter 25 and chapter 46. I invite you to look at those verses because I think this is important. Anytime someone tries to convince us that the Bible is wrong by using the Bible itself, we need to understand what it's telling us. And so look at Daniel chapter 1, but also Jeremiah chapter 25. In Jeremiah 25, it says, "The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah. That was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon." Now I'm going to stop there for a moment. Jeremiah 25 verse 1 says that Jehoiakim became king in the fourth year of Jehoiakim was the first year that Nebuchadnezzar was the king. But in Daniel chapter 1, it says in the third year of Jehoiakim was when Nebuchadnezzar became king of Babylon. How do we reconcile these two things? Go on in verse 9, it says, "Behold, I will send for all the tribes of the north, declares the Lord, and for Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and I will bring them against this land and its inhabitants and against all these surrounding nations. I will devote them to destruction and make them a horror, a hissing, and an everlasting desolation." You see, Jeremiah the prophet was prophesying that Nebuchadnezzar was going to come after the Battle of Carchemish that we talked about this morning. He's going to come down and he's going to destroy Israel. He's going to take over Israel, and God will use Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians to exact his judgment upon the Jews. Chapter 46 of Jeremiah, verses 1 and 2. If you want to look at that, Jeremiah 46, 1 and 2 says, "The word of the Lord," "the word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah the prophet concerning the nations, about Egypt, concerning the army of Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, which was by the river Euphrates at Carchemish, and which Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, defeated in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah." So we're talking about the exact same things in the book of Jeremiah, which, by the way, Ezekiel, Daniel, and Jeremiah were all contemporaries. They all prophesied about the same time. Ezekiel and Daniel were both prophesying from Babylon, whereas Jeremiah remained in Israel throughout his lifetime. But they're all talking about the same time frames. How can we justify one says it happened in the fourth year and one says it happens in the third year? And some might say, well, it was 2,600 years ago. What does it matter if we're 1 year off? But frankly, that's not good enough. If we believe that God's word is true, then it's completely true with no errors. That's what the word inerrant means. It has no errors. And so, what archaeology has discovered is that the Hebrews and the Babylonians used different systems of counting to number the years that a leader was in power. And I didn't put all the details here, but if a Jewish leader had served any part of that next year, for example, with me right now, you would say I've been the pastor for 2 years. If you're counting the Jewish way, because I've served a portion of that second year. But if you were counting the Babylonian way, well, I've completed 1 year. You see the difference? Archaeological discoveries have shown us that the systems that they used were different, and therefore, Jeremiah was speaking to them according to the Jewish way of looking at it, whereas Daniel, who had been had lived 70 years of his 85-year life in the land of Babylon, was counting it according to the Babylonian way of doing it. Does that make sense? Another archaeological discovery that has been made, Daniel portrays Belshazzar as ruler when Babylon falls. And this is much later in his life. And so Daniel says that it's Belshazzar that is the ruler when Babylon falls and it's taken over by the Medes and Persians. But cuneiform records show that Nabonidus, that was Belshazzar's father, Nabonidus, was the king on the throne of Babylon at the time that it fell. So, is Daniel right or is Daniel wrong? Well, further Babylonian records show that Daniel is actually right. In fact, Belshazzar was made co-regent with his father, Nabonidus, because his father was in Syria when the city of Babylon fell. So Belshazzar was in Babylon, Nabonidus was in Syria, and so they were serving father and son as co-regents. Daniel spoke of the king in the place where he was. The cuneiform had record of the king that was in Syria. So archaeological discoveries continue to prove that Daniel is accurate historically. Another thing that is interesting about the book of Daniel that is unlike any other book in the entire Bible is that the book of Daniel is written in two different languages. Now, what languages were the Bible written in? Hebrew and what else? Aramaic. Aramaic's that third one. And you know, when I'd always known that, you know, because it was Bible trivia and I like Bible trivia. So they asked the question, what's the original language of the Bible? Hebrew, Greek, and that other one, Aramaic. But I really didn't ever know what portion of the Bible was in Aramaic, or for that matter, what Aramaic was. Well, the book of Daniel actually is written, it's about half and half Aramaic and Hebrew. If you start in Daniel chapter 1, verse 1, and go through chapter 2, the first part of verse 4, that section is written in Hebrew. But starting in chapter 2, verse 4, the second half, going through the end of chapter 7, that portion is written in Aramaic. And then, back starting in chapter 8, verse 1, through the end of the book, that part is written in Hebrew. So, all in all, there are 157 and a half verses in Hebrew, and 199 and a half verses written in Aramaic. Now, some have argued that Daniel's choice of language, as well as specific words, indicate a late authorship, but these arguments fail to withstand criticism. I could go on about this, but I purposefully did not include much more than this in my notes because the books that I read covered about 44 or 45 pages dealing with the languages of the book of Daniel. And as Jerese is shaking her head, I didn't feel like you needed all that information. But the interesting thing was, is Daniel chooses to borrow words from other languages. And that's what a lot of this gets into. And they talk about, well, how could he have borrowed certain words because we don't have record that they existed in the 6th century BC. And again, I won't get into all the details. But when I'm talking about borrowing words, how many of you have ever said gracias? How many of you speak Spanish? Okay, yes, well, a few of you. But, you know, we all, you know, living in the culture that we live in today, it is a mixture of cultures, and there are words that are borrowed from many different languages that get put into the English language and are used very commonly, such as gracias. How many of you have ever used the word boondocks? I've shared this with you before, but the word boondocks is the only word in the English language that has its etymology from a Tagalog word in the Philippines, the word bundok, which is a mountainous region where there is nothing. And so that was a word that was incorporated after World War II, and the GIs came home and they started talking about the boonies and the boondocks, because that's what all the Filipinos would call the region where they were fighting in the Cordillera Valley in the Philippines. And so those are words that are borrowed. And all of those words have etymologies, but some people are trying to say, well, because of some of the words that he borrowed, it must be of late authorship. But the scholars that I read were able to refute all of those different concepts there. And so they did fail to withstand criticism. So in short, I don't know if I can still say that, but in short, in dealing with the language of the the authorship and the date of the book of Daniel, the concern over date and authorship of the book of Daniel rests on the biblical worldview of the interpreter. Pay close attention to that. What you think about the authorship and the date completely and totally depends upon your biblical worldview. If an individual believes in the supernatural ability of God to reveal the future to his prophet, then he has no problem accepting Daniel as the author in the 6th century BC. However, if an individual does not believe in the supernatural work of God among man, he must find an alternative means of explaining the authorship of Daniel. And that's where we came up with the Maccabean thesis. Because they don't believe that God would reveal such a thing, that God would enable Daniel to see into the future. And it's crazy how clearly depicted through the dreams that Nebuchadnezzar has in Daniel chapter 2, and then the dream again in Daniel chapter 7 of the four beasts, how God revealed to Daniel what would happen over those next 600 to 800 years of world history. But God is in control. And we believe that God supernaturally is able to reveal those things to Daniel. And so that's why it's important. So don't let anybody tell you, oh, Daniel wasn't really written by Daniel. That was written after the fact, and he was just writing down, you know, trying to make metaphors on human history. No. It's not non-historical pseudo-prophecies. It is accurate and reliable history and prophetic revelation from God. So let's think about the historical background for just a minute. An understanding of the historical background of the book of Daniel is essential for a proper understanding of its message. And so I want to just kind of give you a brief background of, or a brief overview of the historical events that are important to the life of Daniel. If we start back sometime around 612 BC, we find the Assyrian Empire, whose capital was Nineveh. What's special about Nineveh? That's where Jonah went, okay? And so the Assyrian Empire has been ruling the known world now for about 200 years, since the days of Tiglath-Pileser, and that started around 845 BC. And so in 612 BC, a little over 200 years later, we have the fall of Nineveh, which is the capital of Assyria. And at that time, well, Nabopolassar, which is Nebuchadnezzar's father, Nabopolassar had come to be the king of Babylon around 625 BC. He had rebelled and led the Babylonians to overthrow the Assyrians in that place. And so 13 years later, when Nineveh fell, Nabopolassar was the king, and Nebuchadnezzar, the son of Nabopolassar, was the general who led the Babylonian army against Nineveh, defeating it in 612 BC. Okay? Lots of big words here, lots of big names. But the key one here is Nebuchadnezzar is the general who defeated the Assyrians in Nineveh. And so then 7 years later, Nebuchadnezzar is still the general, fighting his father Nabopolassar's battles. And so they're trying to take over the known world, and they're going up against the Egyptians. Pharaoh Necho had a huge empire across northern Africa and was reaching up into the Middle East. And so they came to Carchemish, which is in modern-day Syria. And in 605 BC, there was a battle there between the Egyptians and the Babylonians in Carchemish. Nebuchadnezzar defeated the Egyptians and chased them south through the land of Israel and through Judah, and because the Egyptians were trying to retreat back to their homeland in Egypt. While Nebuchadnezzar was in Jerusalem, and this is a very big, big event in Daniel's life, while he was chasing the Egyptians back to Egypt, word came that Nabopolassar, his father, had died. He had been in Babylon, but he died. And so Nebuchadnezzar had to stop what he was doing, pursuing the Egyptians. He stopped there in Palestine and then went back to Babylon. When he went back, he took with him a group of Jewish captives, Daniel and his friends, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, were four of those Jewish captives that came back with Nebuchadnezzar in 605 BC. All right? And so, big event in the life of Daniel. And we talked a little bit about that this morning. 8 years later, 597 BC, a second group of captives were taken to Babylon. Jehoiakim followed the reign of his father Jehoiakim, and he lasted a grand total of 3 months. How would you like to be the king that lasted for 3 months? He became king, and 3 months later, Nebuchadnezzar conquered him, and at that point in time, they took back another group of Jewish captives, and in that second group of Jewish captives, Ezekiel was part of that group, as well as, Jehoiakim, Ezekiel, plus 10,000 Jewish artisans, okay? Skilled laborers, artisans. And so Zedekiah was installed as the king in Jerusalem, but he was a weak king. It was somebody that Nebuchadnezzar could control. And so that was in 597. By 586 BC, we find the fall of Jerusalem and the temple was destroyed. This was the temple that was built by Solomon. And so Jerusalem was totally devastated by Babylonian forces. And at this time, a third group of captives were taken out of Jerusalem and taken back to Babylon. But Jeremiah, remember we said there were three prophets? Who were they? Daniel, Ezekiel, and Jeremiah. Jeremiah was not taken with that group. He was left. He was part of those who stayed behind in Jerusalem in 586. And so things kept going for about 50 years almost. It just continued. Babylon was in charge of everything. And the next major event that took place was in 539 to 536, somewhere in there, when Babylon falls and the first remnant of Jews returns to Jerusalem. Cyrus was the king of Persia, and he sent back a group of people under the leadership of a man named Zerubbabel, and you probably recognize him. And so the foundation of the temple was started at that time, but the temple was not completed until 516, about 20 years later. The foundation was completed in 516. But it wasn't until 60 years later when Ezra returned with a group, the second remnant, that he finished the temple. He led a group back to Jerusalem and led a revival among the Israelites at that time. And then finally, a few years later, 444 BC, a third remnant came back. And does anyone know who might have been in that third remnant? Nehemiah. So you see how all of this fits together. That's the reason for the brief overview. So they came back. They did a little bit of work on the foundation. Then Ezra led another group. They built the temple. And then a little bit later, Nehemiah came back and they built the walls around Jerusalem. And so these are the big events. Daniel lived through many of these historical events. It's estimated that he was born somewhere around 620 BC. He was captured in 605 BC at the age of 15, and he lived through the entire Babylonian captivity until the time of King Cyrus taking over and the fall of Babylon, and he continued to serve until 535 BC at the age somewhere around 85 years old. All right? So that's kind of the historical background. You know, this morning we talked a little bit about the culture that the Hebrew children faced, and I'm looking at my time. Real briefly, I just wanted to share just a little bit more about the cultural background. We've got about 12 minutes left or so. There's a writer, I read part of his this morning, H.I. Hester, who wrote The Heart of Hebrew History, and he talked about the amazing culture and the amazing city that Babylon was. And, you know, he says the Jews found advanced culture, big business, and material splendor. Babylon, the chief city, was one of great wealth and magnificence. It was the center of a vast empire, including all of Mesopotamia, which is modern-day Iraq, okay? All of Mesopotamia and the highlands beyond, as well as Syria and Palestine. And the city of Babylon was on this plain that overlooked the Euphrates. And, you know, Nebuchadnezzar's wife was from an area that was much more plush and had many more plants and that kind of stuff. And so what Nebuchadnezzar did, how many of you have ever heard of the Hanging Gardens of Babylon? You've seen those pictures. How many of you made a model of that in elementary school? Really? I'm the only one? Wow. I figured we all did that. But I did. I made this model, and I've got some pictures of it here in my notes. But, he created this structure that, you know, it was a, someone help me, what's the word for that? No, but thank you. One of these. What are those called? I forget. It's like a pyramid, but it's the Babylonian version. Anyway, my mind just went blank. But what he did is, the way it was built on different levels. And by the way, you remember in Daniel chapter 1 where it talked about the land of Shinar? Does anybody know the significance of the land of Shinar? That was the same exact location where the Tower of Babel was built. Okay? And so they're still building their towers. And it was, kind of like a, they were still kind of trying to get to heaven. But what they did is they would put plants on each level, and so it looked like hanging gardens. And so it was a magnificent place. They're described here. In reality, the hanging gardens were immense terraces placed on top of each other until they reached the height of the city walls. On these were planted beautiful shrubs and flowers. Even if this ancient description is exaggerated, we may be sure that this great city was one that was beautiful and famous in ancient times. And so, again, these are the country boys of Palestine being uprooted and set down in the big city of Babylon. And, you know, a city with 15-foot walls all the way around it, 15 miles long were those walls on each side, with major thoroughfares leading to all the major gates. This was a huge, huge city. And so, finally, as far as background information, I just want to point out, the book of Daniel has certain things that it really focuses on theologically, and these will be unpacked as we go through the book. The first and foremost thing that the book of Daniel teaches us is that God is sovereign in the affairs of the world. And we're going to be talking about that a lot next Sunday, Sunday morning especially. Another thing it teaches and focuses on is that God loves His children and He cares for them. It also focuses some on prophecy, dealing with the Messiah and the person and work of Jesus Christ, the Messiah, as well as eschatology, which is the study of end times, dealing with the tribulation and the last days and the new earth. And so that's kind of some background information. What I'd like to do is just take a few minutes to walk through the first few verses of Daniel chapter 1. The first half of Daniel, as I shared, features all the stories that we have of Daniel and his friends. In fact, it has five events selected from Daniel's life. It's a very long life, but he chose five events to write about. And then we have one other event that took place with his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The first event described here relays the story of how Daniel and many others find themselves living in this strange culture, a new land with strange beliefs and, everything being different. And so Daniel's character is tested as his home culture clashes with his new host culture. And so in Daniel chapter 1, we find some of this historical setting that we've been talking about already. And we find the two superpowers of the Middle East coming together in the late 7th century, clashing at Carchemish, and the Babylonians taking over Palestine, which then led to the capture of Jerusalem and the captivity of Daniel and his friends, and they were taken back to Babylon. So who were Daniel and his friends? Who are these guys? Daniel chapter 1, if I can find it here in my Bible, I'm turning the wrong way. Daniel chapter 1 tells us a little bit about who they are, and so I want us to look at that for a moment. If we start in verse 3, it tells us, "Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, and learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them," and I'll go into that in a minute. So who are these guys? Well, it tells us right here who they are. It says that they are Israelites from either royal family or nobility, and they were from the tribe of Judah is what we find. And so their families are probably families of a very high social standing. Their names are Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Daniel's name means that God is my judge. Hananiah means Yahweh is gracious. Mishael means who is what God is. I like that. Who is what God is? And Azariah, Yahweh has helped, or Yahweh will help. And so all of these young men, their names are focused upon God, and who they are is identified with their name. But when they get to Babylon, the very first thing that happens is they are given new names by Ashpenaz, the chief eunuch. So Daniel became Belteshazzar. Bel, protect his life, is the meaning of that. Bel is another name for Marduk, which was the god of the Babylonians. So what it's saying, they where before Daniel's name, God is my judge, that's what his name meant, now it's focused on an idolatrous god of the Babylonians. Bel, protect his life. Hananiah became Shadrach. Shadrach means command of Aku, the moon god. And so we find that his name also focuses on a Babylonian god. Mishael became Meshach. Remember what Mishael's name meant? Who is what God is? The name that they gave him in Babylon meant who is what Aku is. Again, focusing on the Babylonian gods. And then Azariah became Abednego, which Nego is a form of the word Nebo, which was the second most powerful god in Babylonian pantheon. And so Abednego meant the servant of Nebo. And so Ashpenaz assigned these young captives Babylonian names in order to assimilate them more readily into their culture. This still happens today. How many of you have ever met a student from China? All right. What was their name? Anyone? Did they tell you their real name or did they tell you their American name? Okay. I can't tell you how many Chinese people I've met named Harrison Ford. John Wayne. I mean, it's really funny. The names that they choose for themselves, and the reason that they pick those names is to help them assimilate. Well, that's kind of what it is here. Ashpenaz was given the task of assimilating these young men into Babylonian culture. And one writer says that there's probably no intention on the Babylonians' part to degrade or humiliate these captives by this name change, but rather they're just trying to help them to assimilate. But in each case, the Hebrew name contains a reference to the one true God, and the Babylonian counterpart involves an allusion to a pagan deity. So where were they taken, these three Hebrew children and Daniel? Where were they taken and when were they taken and where were they taken to? We've said they were taken in 605 BC. They were part of the first group of Jewish captives. They were all teenagers at the time of their capture, all ranging between 15 and 20. My son will be 15 in a couple of months. That just blows my mind to think that that was about the age of Daniel at the time of his capture. We mentioned the land of Shinar is another name for Babylon. And this was the original location of the Tower of Babel. So why were these men chosen? And we're going to pick that up next week. But that's right. They were smart, good-looking, and healthy. Thank you for your patience and listening tonight. I do want to ask you, in our study of the book of Exodus, I provided you guys with notes. If that's something that you want, I will be more than happy. I mean, I've got 13 pages of notes from what I did tonight. I'll be happy to give you an abbreviated version of that, but at the same time, I'm not going to waste copies and mess up our foyer table if you don't want them. So you let me know privately, and I can get some notes for you if that's something you're interested in. Thank you for being here tonight. Are there any announcements or prayer requests that need to come before us at this time? All right. If you hadn't heard about The special guest we're going to have a week from Wednesday at Awana Club and in the youth group. His name is Marty Boone, and he's going to be a lot of fun for the kids, and we're hoping to bring in new visitors. We're trying to do whatever we can to get people involved in Awana Club. So pray for the balloon man, Marty Boone. All right? Miss Miriam? No, you don't. We have 15 copies back there right now, which I'll show you where those are, Miss Miriam. And if we run out, we can order some more and get them here through Amazon, cheaper than what you can buy them at Lifeway, I promise. Yes, Brother Ron? Mission Rally Friday night. Mission Rally Friday night. That's at Plainview, Oklahoma. And are you the speaker? That's what I was thinking. So Brother Ron will be our speaker Friday night. So that'll be in Plainview, Oklahoma. Thursday, Dan and I will be traveling down to Conway, down and back that day for meetings at the BMA headquarters. And we appreciate your prayers and for us as we're traveling. Yes. Pray for our student missionaries as they're continuing to raise funds. They still have a long way to go. We appreciate all that y'all did, especially with birthday gifts for Jesus. But if there's more that you can help with, I know it is needed. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for being here tonight. Let's stand and we'll be dismissed.